Good morning, everybody. Last week, we learned the Ramban in Parashat Vayera that deals with all of the major aspects of the problem of Pilegesh Begiva. Basically, the Ramban said, and I'm going to review it quickly, the Ramban said that the story of Pilegesh Begiva, while it may seem similar to the story of Sodom, was not identical with the story of Sodom. What are the differences between Pilegesh Begiva and Sodom? Pilegesh Begiva were only a number of people. It wasn't an entire city. Sodom, it says, Minar Vad Zaken, Kol Ha'om Mikotzer, from young until old, the entire people from all around, everybody, was part of the terrible act that took place at the time of Lot. Furthermore, in Sodom, the intent was that no guest should come through the city. Here, this was not the intent. A number of people who had deviant passions, and they wanted to let loose with their passion. But we're not talking about a plan by which they would make certain that foreigners could not set foot in Giv'a. This was not their intent. Furthermore, in Sodom, it became part of the law of Sodom. Foreigners, raus. We don't want foreigners. We don't want strangers. Sodom is only for the people of Sodom. This was not true in Giv'a. Ramban goes on further to say the actual act itself was an act of rape, but not an act of rape with a married woman. Makes a big difference. Doesn't make the act any more beautiful, but it's not as ugly as it is. Would she have been a married woman? She was not a married woman. They did not intend to kill her. Death came afterwards, possibly the result of exhaustion, and she caught cold, and by morning she died, but it was not their intent to kill her. No, the Ramban doesn't defend. All that the Ramban wants to say is that it's not precisely Sodom. It looks like Sodom, but it's not identical. It's still a terrible thing. Everybody agrees that it's terrible. But at least the Ramban has to point out that it is not identical with Sodom. And despite the fact that it's not identical to Sodom, all of Israel join in order to eradicate this evil from Israel. It's interesting, there's something that I talked about at the end of the class last week. You may recall somebody asked, how does a man take a woman and cut her into 12 pieces? This is a desecration of a human body. We're even concerned in halacha about postmortems. Here he cuts her into 12 different pieces. So I told you a story of an incident in my own life when I had to paskin with regard to a postmortem, and where there is good reason, it is permitted. And of all things, I told you about it, an industrial accident that had happened. A man was killed, and the family was in touch with me. Can they permit a postmortem? And the difference will be whether they will be able to receive workman's compensation. Poor family, without this they would have been lost. I permitted it, and then I was attacked by colleagues in the yeshiva where I was hashiva, and they said, no, we have to call Rav Moshe. They called Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe permitted it. Of all things, I found in one of the responsa of Rav Moshe Feinstein that he deals precisely with Pilegesh Begiva. And it is with regard to this story that he says, from here we see that when there is good reason, it's not merely a random kind of defiling a body, but it's in order to bring an entire people to their feet, that they should do something about this evil. That's considered having done it for good reason, and therefore it is not prohibited. So on the contrary, it is Pilegesh Begiva itself, which is one of the proofs that Rav Moshe brings, that yes, a post-mortem or inflicting some kind of damage upon a body is permitted as long as there is a much higher purpose. And here certainly there was a much higher purpose. The Ramban also went on to say that both the people of Binyamin, and we're going to learn now chapter 20. I want to do chapter 20 today. There's a great deal to learn from the point of view of text, and there are very fascinating ideas that emerge from chapter 20. There are going to be three battles. In the first two battles, Israel is going to be beaten before the forces of Binyamin. It's only on the third day that finally they are victorious. And the Ramban says that the reason why Israel was beaten on the first two days is because they did not ask God, will we succeed? They asked God, should we go? Which means that they assume that success will be theirs. Why will success be theirs? Because of their 400,000 against some 20, 30, or maybe 40,000 of Binyamin. And good point. Maybe because they were so convinced that they had right on their side. I'm going to leave the answer to that question until we come to one amazing pasuk right here in the Perek. And I think that that pasuk is going to be the clue to answer your question. Sure, they may have very well felt, Debbie's asking very well, they may very well have felt that, right is might. We're right in what we're doing. And therefore, right is might. We deserve to win. So we must also recall that the Ramban quoted the statement of our rabbis that while, yes, they may very well be right here, but there's something wrong with their being that right. And this is part of the answer to your question. What's wrong with their being so right? The famous statement of our rabbis, Al kvodi lo mechitem. For my honor, you didn't object. Remember, at the very same time that this is taking place, there's Pesel Micha. There is an idol that has been set up in Dan, and there's Pesel Micha, and nobody has done anything about it. My honor, for my dignity, you did not rise as one man in order to eradicate it. Bechvod Bos of Adam, the honor and the dignity of men of flesh and blood, there you do rise as one. So even in this great act of attempting to eradicate evil, there is still another kind of evil that prevails in Israel, and they remain silent. So that there's something lacking even in this great outpouring of indignation. If you're indignant about this, you should certainly have been indignant about Pesel Micha. Let's read chapter 20. We already began. Let's read it again. Vayetzu kol bnei Yisrael, all of the children of Israel went out. Vatikoel ha'edo ki ish echad. The community gathered as one person. L'midan vad Be'er Sheva, from Dan until Be'er Sheva. What's interesting, of course, is even from Dan they come. What's in Dan? Pesel Micha is right now in Dan. And even from Dan they come. And it doesn't occur to them that they should very well go right ahead and object to what's happening right in Dan. They don't see the terrible thing that's happening in their own backyard, but they are raised to action because of something that's happening elsewhere. Incidentally, that can happen very often to us. The Mishnah says, Kol ha-negoyim odom roeh. We're always capable of seeing what's wrong with somebody else, but we have a great deal of difficulty seeing what's wrong with us. The people of Dan, first ones mentioned, they're out from Dan, they travel to Mitzpah, they're going to join all of Israel. And they can't see that there's something terrible taking place in Dan itself. Ve'eretz HaGilad. Eretz HaGilad means the other side of the Jordan. They also came al Hashem haMitzvah, to God in Mitzvah. Vayityatzu pinot kolham, and all of the strata of the nation stood. Kol shiftei Yisrael, all the tribes of Israel. The kahal am ha'elukim, the gathering of the nation of God. Arba meyot elef ish ragli sholeif chorev, 400,000 men with carrying swords. The Malbim, when he describes the dissection of the body of the woman, he says that there's something very symbolic about it. And this may be another reason why the story appears here and in Tanakh altogether. He says what the man wanted to demonstrate is that a body that is torn asunder can obviously have no life in it at all. The only time a people can begin to live is if all of the limbs are joined to one another. One of the things that we had mentioned a number of times is this was a period in history where the 12 tribes saw themselves as separate and distinct units. It was going to take a long time until all of the tribes would finally merge into one entity called the people of Israel. I said that this is one of the problems, one of the challenges of our generation, that people coming from so many different places in the world have to merge and blend in some way to become a single people. It doesn't mean that they have to necessarily drop their unique identity, but on some level, there has to be a sense of one people. He cuts the body up into 12, and he wants to demonstrate to them all, when you are 12, you're not one. And if you're 12, then there is no life in 12. There therefore also will not be the lifeblood of the Jewish people, which is the divine presence resting in Israel, that cannot truly rest amongst the Jewish people when they are separate organs distinct from one another. Here they gather, look at all of the terms that are used in this passage. Kol b'nei Yisrael, all the children of Israel, Vati kohel ha'edah, edah already is a community, and this community became a kohol, joined together, from Dan until Be'er Sheva, and Eretz Argilot, El Hashem ha'mitzvah, to God in mitzvah. There was a Rashi, earlier in Sefer Shoftim, in chapter Yud Aleph, chapter 11, Pasuk 11, when Yiftach gathers all of the Jewish people to mitzvah, Vayedaber Yiftach et kol dvaro lufnei Hashem v'mitzvah, says Rashi, Lemakom shenez v'kulam, the place where all of them gathered, Shehashchina shiruya al rov tzibur, because the divine presence rests upon the majority of the Jewish people. El Hashem HaMitzvah over here, certainly after the description of all of the people joining together, like one, Kol Ha'am, all of them together. We're talking about a sense of real unity. And unity, in unity there is not merely strength, but there is divine strength. Let's go further. By Yishmu B'nei Binyamin, the sons of Binyamin heard Ki Olu B'nei Yisrael HaMitzvah, that the children of Israel had gone off to Mitzvah, Yomru B'nei Yisrael. The children of Israel said, the children of Israel said, speak. How did this evil happen? We have to be careful when we read this pasuk, since the subject of the first part of the pasuk is B'nai Binyamin, the sons of Binyamin. We might think that the second half of the pasuk is also talking about the sons of Binyamin, but it's not so. The second half of the pasuk is the Jewish people talking to the man, the husband of the Pilegesh. Dabru, speak, Eichad ni'atahara azot. How did this happen? You may wonder about the fact that it's written in the plural, because in a sense they're speaking not only to him, they're speaking to themselves. Don't we sometimes say, how did something of this sort happen? There are two things meant by the question. First of all, the question is, I want the facts. Tell me what happened. But it's also a form of an exclamation, like, how did such a thing happen? Doesn't necessarily mean that I'm interested in knowing the facts. I already know the facts. I just want to know how could something of this sort had happened. Ayan v'isha Levi, the man, the Levi, who was the husband of Aisha ha-Nirtzocha, the woman who was killed. And here the term, the woman who was killed, is because the Pasuk is indicting the people of Binyamin. despite the fact that the Kamban said that they were not technically guilty of having killed her, but this is the way we have to look at it. An act of murder took place over here, and it makes no difference to us whether it's murder in the first degree, premeditated murder, it's murder in the second degree, or it's manslaughter. As far as the Jewish people in Israel is concerned, this is murder. Vayomer, he said, I came to Givah, which was in Binyamin, Ani, I, Upilagji, Lalun. We came to stay overnight. The people of Givah stood up against me. They surrounded the house at night. Me they wanted to kill. He is therefore explaining why he had to send his Pilagesh out. Me they wanted to kill. Our lives were in danger. She most probably would have been violated anyway. At Pilakshi Inu, they tortured her and she died. And I took hold of my Pilagesh Vamatkaha, and I cut her up into pieces, and I sent her out the whole Sedei, Nachalat Yisrael, and the entire field of the inheritance of Israel. He uses this term, Nachalat Yisrael, because he wants to tell them that we came into Eretz Yisrael in order to be Am Hashem, the inheritance of God. There is a heritage to the Jewish people. This kind of an evil taking place is a rejection and a denial of all that we stand for. And we will see this in Chazal. Ki osu zimon uvalo b'Yisrael, because a terrible thing, an immoral and abominable act has been done in Israel. Hinei kulchem, b'nei Yisrael, behold, here you are, all of Israel. Havu lachem davar, talk about it. The Eitzot give counsel, halom, here and now. Vayakom kol ha'an ki yishechot leimah, the entire people arose as one man, saying, lo neleich ish lo ha'olo, we are not going to go each man to his tent, lo nosur ish lo beito, no one is going to turn to his own home. This is what we should do about the people of Givah. We're going to go up against her and we're going to draw lots. We're going to find out who it is that should go first. In the next pasuk, they point out that while they're going to go to war, it's necessary to have people who are going to supply them. They take 10% of the 400,000, and the 10% are going to be in charge of supply. They are preparing themselves. 10 out of 100 from all of the tribes of Israel. 100 from 1,000, 1,000 from 10,000. They're the ones who are going to bring material and supplies for the nation. So that we should be able to do and come to Geva Binyamin and do to them kechol hanevola asher osam Yisrael, because of this terrible thing that had been done in Israel. All of Israel are gathered like one man, chaverim. Very fascinating. Tremendous, tremendous unity by the Jewish people. Great, great outpouring of warmth and closeness. Vayishlachu shiftei Yisrael anoshim, the tribes of Israel sent people, the whole shiftei Binyamin leimor, through all the tribes of Binyamin. Now this is an interesting word. Binyamin is a tribe. What's meant by Shiftei Binyamin, the tribes of Binyamin? The word Shevet can also refer to a family. Binyamin was made up of many families. We had pointed out Binyamin had 10 children. The families of Binyamin are referred to as the tribes of Binyamin. They sent to them a message saying, Moha Raha Azot, what is this terrible evil that has happened in your midst? Now, give us these people, these evil people, asher b'giva, and we will put them to death. We will remove the evil from Israel. The sons of Binyamin did not want to listen to the voice of their brothers, the sons of Israel. Why is B'nai out of the text? B'nai does not appear, B'nai Binyamin, the word B'nai does not appear in the text, whereas B'nai Yisrael, now, in terms of the way it's read, there is a balance. B'nai Binyamin did not want to listen to the voice of their brothers, B'nai Yisrael. When we have something of this sort, it obviously has to have meaning. I'm going to take the liberty of of saying that if it would write B'nai Binyamin, it would seem to be indicating as though the fault goes back to the father, Binyamin. They are B'nai Binyamin biologically. They are not B'nai Binyamin spiritually. The rest of the children of Israel, you can refer to them as B'nai Yisrael. These are the sons of Yisrael. These are Jews. Can we refer to the people of Binyamin as truly sons of Binyamin? Binyamin was called Binyamin HaTzadik. He was one of those who was called Tzadik. The Gemara says there are four people who died only because of the sin of the Nachash. Because Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz Hadaat, because sin, he never committed a sin in his life. One of the four was Binyamin, the son of Yaakov. In his personal life, he never committed a sin, and the only reason why he died at the end of his days is because there was a decree of death. No other reason. No, God forbid. But doesn't Torah say, doesn't God say, because you have rejected me, therefore there's now going to be death, and woman is going to have pain in labor, and the earth is going to give out thorns and thistles? Death comes because of that sin. The original sin that the Catholic Church believes in, they believe that every little child who's born is born with a soul that's black as sin. And the only way that that soul can be saved is by believing in him. On the contrary, we're saying that Binyamin was a pure soul from the moment he was born until he died. And the only reason why he died was because such was the gezeira, the divine decree. Is the divine decree necessarily a curse? That's a separate discussion. It may not necessarily be a curse. Maybe it's extremely important that man should have a limited amount of time on the face of this earth. If we would have unlimited time, we'd do nothing. Listen, first 1,000 years, I'm going to live it up. The second 1,000 years, I'll got it gone. And you know, maybe later on, I mean, man needs time limitation. We only work and produce and accomplish because time hangs over our heads. If I don't do it now, it won't be done. I didn't say it because I don't remember the Gemara. And I'm ready to admit it shamefacedly. Yishai was a second.
No.
I don't remember. I left it to Gemara and Sechta Shabbos. And you know, it happens. Maybe Oved, who was the father of Yishai. But if I remember to do my homework, I will. But you understand what I'm saying? Binyamin was a tzaddik. To refer to them as B'nai Binyamin outright would leave the impression as though, well, this is the result. From the Binyamin, you have people who are going to do something like this. So the Pasuk wanted to remove the B'nai so that we should know that these are people of Binyamin. They happen to be B'nai Binyamin. But they are not B'nai Binyamin in the spiritual sense. In the biological one, yes, but not in the spiritual. V'yayosu B'nai Binyamin min ha'orim ha'gidata. The sons of Binyamin gathered from their cities to give alat seitla milchaman b'nei Yisrael, to go out to war with the children of Israel. Vayitpaktu b'nei Binyamin v'yomahu meharim. The children of Binyamin were counted that day, all who came from the city, esrim v'shisha elef ish shalev charev. 26,000 men holding swords. Levad miyoshve ha-giva hitpaktu, aside from the number that came from Giva, who was shva meyot ish b'chor 700 men. So we have a cheshvan of 26,700. And from the 26,700, there were 700 chosen ones, iter yad yemino. There were 700 who were lefties. And these lefties, kol zeh, koleya po even el hasara v'lo yachati. They were such great warriors that they were able to throw a stone, koleya, a slingshot, to something that was as thin as a hair, v'lo yachati, and they wouldn't miss the mark. This is the source, really, for the meaning of the word chet. There are different meanings, there are different words that describe sin. Chet, avon, pesha. A pesha is an act of absolute rebellion against God. I know it's wrong, I know I shouldn't do it, I don't really have any great need to do it, but I simply reject God and therefore I do it. An avon is, I know that it's wrong, I shouldn't do it, but I can't help myself. A chet indeed is an error. A chet is somebody who misses the mark. He didn't mean to do something evil. He didn't want to. He couldn't help himself. He made a mistake. So chet means missing the mark. Over here we have the one who shoots the rock at the stone, at something that is a hairbreadth. He doesn't miss. So we're talking about 700 men. You can imagine lefties being able to do something like that. We're talking about great warriors. Yes? The question is, why doesn't Binyamin react? So I would say part of the reason, and the Ramban had said some of it, the Ramban had said that they felt it was their responsibility and theirs alone to judge the sinners of their tribe. As we have pointed out, this is an internal matter. Now, we in Binyamin will take care of this and we're going to deal with the issue as we see fit. It's not your responsibility to tell us what to do. And if you want, just take a look back at that pasuk and I'll point out something else. V'lo avu b'nei Binyamin. Remember the pasuk where the b'nei doesn't appear? You have to be able to read a pasuk and read it with precision. V'lo avu b'nei Binyamin lishmoa b'kol acheihem b'nei Yisrael. You should remember already from a number of shiurim that I said in the past, there is a Malbim that tells us that there's a difference between the word b'kol and the word l'kol. In Tanakh you will find somebody listening or not listening b'kol in somebody's voice, or listening or not listening l'kol to somebody's voice. What's the difference between the two? Says the Malbim, lishmoa b'kol means to listen precisely to what somebody else wants. It does not rule out that I may listen in general to what you want, but I'm going to do it my own way. Lishmoa l'kol means, I'm going to listen, do it my own way. Lishmoa b'kol would mean I will take instructions from you precisely what you say. I'll give you a number of examples. When Sarah says to Avraham, she sees that Yishmael has become a very bad influence on Yitzhak, so she says, Garesh et ha'oma hazot ve'et b'na, remove, throw out this maidservant and her son. And Avraham gets angry. God appears to Avraham and he says to him, Kol asher tomar elecho Sarah, whatever Sarah tells you, Shma b'kola. B'kola means precisely what she says. And therefore it says that Avraham took Sarah, Hagar, put Yishmael on her shoulders, sent her out with a canteen of water and bread. He could have sent her out with servants and slaves and camels. But no, he had to listen to precisely what Sarah said, Gadesh, to cast out. When you throw out, you don't throw out with great fanfare. In Yehoshua we learned when Yehoshua said that great day, Shemesh b'givon dom v'yareach b'emek ayalon, let the sun stop over Givon and the moon over the valley of Ayalon. It says, Lo hayayom kamo, there was not a day like this, lishmoa Hashem b'kol ish, that God should listen in the voice of man. Precisely what Yehoshua commanded, that's exactly what happened. We will have in Parashat Yitro, for example, you have something else. Father-in-law Yitro comes to Moshe and says, listen, the way you're judging the Jewish people, it just won't work.
You alone doing it all, you can't do it. An entire people stands and waits for you day after day. So the pasuk says there that Yisro says to Moshe, Shma bikoli, listen to my voice, Iotzcha, I'm going to give you advice. Later on it says, Vayishma Moshe likol chodno. Moshe listened. The idea in general was good, but precisely as Yitro wanted it, no, Moshe had his own agenda. B'nei Binyamin, if we read the pasuk carefully, therefore, B'nei Binyamin, they're quite ready to do something about it, but as they see fit, they're not ready lishmoa b'kol acheyem. They're not ready to listen to sort of the demanding or commanding voice of their brothers, B'nei Yisrael. It's an internal matter. We will deal with it in our own way. Maybe we don't want to put them to death. Maybe we want to give them Malkus. Maybe we want to fine them. Maybe we want to do something else. So that the pasuk may very well be saying, yes, of course Binyamin is going to do something about it. But not what you want. We will do what we want. That's what that bays, Bikol, is telling us. Very good. Hi, Sava, you're getting better. All the time. Rivka says to Yaakov, Shma Bikoli. Listen, that means do precisely as I tell you. Precisely as I tell you. Not enough Shma Likoli. So I appreciate that you asked the question so that it reminded me to make that comment. Bikol. The difference one letter makes. So it really means that Binyamin may very well also have been completely unnerved and upset by what had taken place. We will deal with it in our own way. There are all sorts of ways. First of all, what's the first thing you do? Afadat chakira. The first thing you have to do is a committee that's going to investigate, find out what happened precisely, how did it happen, who was present at the time, whose name has been permitted lepirsum, and who's the aluf, whose name was not hutal lepirsum. We have to know precisely what happened. We'll deal with it. Anyway, let's go further. So we know how many there were, and now the forces... in Pasuk 17, the forces gather the ish, Yisrael hitpakdu lebat mi binyamin, 400,000 ish, sholev cherev, kol ze ish mulchama, 400,000 men of war. Vayakumu vayalu beit el, they got up and they went up to beit el, vayishalu be'elokim. They're going to ask of God three times. And there's a difference between the way they ask each time. The first time they asked, vayomru b'nei Yisrael, the children of Israel said, mi yalalonu batchila. Who's going to go up first? That means they're not asking for permission to go up. The decision to go up to war against Binyamin has already been taken. They're only asking, God, don't confuse us with the facts. Just tell us who should go first. They're not asking, should we go? And they're not asking, will we succeed? Mi alolon batkila, who goes first? Lamil choman b'nei Binyamin, for war with the sons of Binyamin. Vayomer Hashem, and God said, Yehuda batkila. No, all that God is saying is Yehuda first. Yehuda always goes first. God is not saying whether they should go up. God, the question that you've asked, we've answered. You didn't ask whether you should go up. You asked who goes first. Who goes first? That's Yehuda. And that's going to be a message for all of time. Until the moment will come when they will indeed establish David 350 years later as the king of Klal Yisrael. Yehuda's first. Well, I'm not telling you whether you should go, you shouldn't. You didn't ask me. I didn't tell you whether you're going to win in battle or not. You didn't ask that question. Says the Ramban here, and we learned that last week, why don't they ask whether they will win? They assume it's 400,000 against Binyamin. Obviously we're going to win. Maybe also because they feel that they are completely right, and right is might, and might is right, and numbers is might. And therefore the Ramban says, because they placed too much trust in their own ability to vanquish the forces of Binyamin. And that's a sin. You dare never do that. And watch, it's going to become very, very fascinating. In the morning they got up, they encamped against Gibeah, and the men of Israel went out to war against Binyamin, and the people of Israel spread out for war to Gibeah. The sons of Binyamin came out from Gibeah, and they destroyed in Israel on that day 22,000 men. The many fell into the hands of the few. Now watch these psukim. The people of Israel strengthened themselves. They continue to spread out in warring formation. They remain on the field of battle. They still remain encamped on the field of battle. They're ready for war. And the sons of Israel went up and they cried before God until evening. They ask of God the second time they ask. Shall I again draw close to war in Bnei Binyamin Achi with the sons of Binyamin, my brother? Vayomer Hashem, and God said, Alu Elav, go up to him. Number of things have happened over here. And this will, we have to see the difference between the second day of battle, the second request of God, compare it with the first, and then with the third. What's changed here from the first time? Here they've gone to cry before God. Did everybody go to cry before God? No, the men remained on the field of battle. Who remained? Ish Yisrael remained in the field. Bnei Yisrael went up, says the Malbim. Who were the ones that went up? Ziknei Yisrael went and cried before God, and then they asked, Ha'osif, watch the words, Ha'osif, shall I continue again? Lageshet la'milchama means that I'm ready, I'm on the field. Should I just draw close to battle again with Bnei Binyamin, with the sons of Binyamin? And now they add Achi, my brother. What bothers them is they're troubled now on the second day that this is a civil war. They're waging war with a brother. They had not mentioned that on the first day. The first day they asked, who should go up first to wage war with Bnei Binyamin? Now already they see Binyamin as my brother. But they have not yet seen the error of their ways. They're still ready to do battle. And they don't even bother to ask, will we succeed in battle? Because they still feel that, listen, with the might behind us, of course we're going to win. The sons of Israel drew close to the sons of Binyamin on the second day. Binyamin came out toward them. On the second day, another 18,000 men were killed by Binyamin. We're talking about men of war. Take a look now what's happening on the third day. All of Israel, the entire people, that means they have withdrawn completely from the field of battle. All of them go, Vayavo, Bethel, Vayivku, they cry, Vayeshu, Sham, Lifnei Hashem, they sat there before God, Vayatsu, Vayomahu, Adharev, they fasted that day until evening, Vayalu, Olotu, Shlamim, Lifnei Hashem, and they brought Korbanot, Ola, and Korbanot, Shlamim, Lifnei Hashem. After the defeat of the second day, they understand that something has gone wrong with all of Israel. They all go up before God. They all cry. They all fast. They all do tshuva. And they bring two kinds of korbanot. They bring korban ola. And the Ramban pointed out that korban ola is a korban that one brings because of a sin of thought, for evil thoughts. They realize that the thought that they would be able to win because they have mighty forces, Kochi v'yotzei yadi, the might and strength of my hand, that's sinful. For that they bring korban ola. And once they know that they have sinned, then it means for all intents and purposes anybody could have fallen on the field of battle. Which means that anybody who came home from that battle owes a debt of thanksgiving to God. The korban shlomim that they brought was the todah, to thank God. Now they ask for the third time. Vayishalu b'nei Yisrael b'Hashem, the sons of Israel asked of God, Shomaron b'rito elokim b'yamam ha'im, the ark of the covenant of God is there in those days. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron, Omei Lefanav, and Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron, is the one who stands before the ark those days, saying, Ha'osif od latzeit lamilchama. The second time they asked, Ha'osif, should I continue lageshet? Lageshet means we're on the field of battle, and it's just a matter of lageshet, they love. Now they've all left the field of battle, so the question now becomes the question from the beginning all over again. Should I go out to war against should I go out to war in Bnei Binyamin Achi, and again, yes, my brother in Erdal, or should I stop, should I withhold myself, maybe I shouldn't go out. Vayomer Hashem, God said, Alu, go up, ki mochor et nenu biyadecho, tomorrow I'm going to give them into your hand. They had repented from the sin of pride. They thought that they would be able to vanquish Binyamin on the field of battle. The next pasuk, I believe, is the so beautiful and it's so unusual. Vayosen Yisrael Orvim El Hagiv Asoviv. Yisrael placed an ambush around Giv'ah. What's so unique about this? What's so special about this? Isn't it strange? Now that they have God's guarantee that they're going to win, they begin to employ strategy. Shouldn't it be precisely the opposite? Now that we have carte blanche, we have a blank check. God says, Nocha, tomorrow at Nenu B'yadach, I'm going to give them into your hands. Now all they have to do is twiddle their thumbs and just go singing a happy tune out to war, and Bnei Binyamin are simply going to fall before them. It isn't so. It isn't so. I made this point in the Parsha Shir Yehoshua with I, and I had made it in the Parsha, on Parshat Chayisorah, we talked about the Haftorah of Parshat Chayisorah, where there's a rebellion against David, as David is dying toward the end of his life. His son Adoniyahu ben Haggit attempts to usurp the throne. Natan HaNavi comes to David and to Bathsheba. We have to do something about this. And I pointed out that Natan HaNavi is the one who had told David prophetically that Shlomo is going to be king. Yet he is the one in that first chapter of Malachim, he is the one that pulls all sorts of strings to make sure that the rebellion of Adoniyahu is going to be frustrated and aborted. And I asked the question, why does Natan HaNavi have to bother? Why doesn't he simply sit back and enjoy watching these mere mortals play games trying to appoint somebody else as king? It's not going to work. He knows. He has God's guarantee that Shlomo is going to be king. And furthermore, I had also asked in Parshat Chayisar itself, God had promised Avraham that Yitzchak is going to be the one through whom they will have children. And a great nation is going to come from Yitzchak. So what's he getting all unnerved to find a girl, a wife for Yitzchak? Just sit back to the Rabbeinu Shlomo. We'll send a kala. Wasn't it announced in heaven 40 days before Yitzchak was born? Wasn't there a voice that went out of heaven that says, Yitzchak is going to marry Rivka, the daughter of Betuel? Of course. So somehow or other they'll meet. So the point that we established is that even man who has all of the best guarantees from God, that does not free him from the responsibility to act. Man has a responsibility, lehishtadel, to do his hishtadot, he has to do his effort. And here we see it so graphically portrayed. The first 2 days when they don't have any guarantee from God that they're going to be victorious, we don't see them doing any kind of strategy on the field of battle. Watch what's going to happen in this battle on the third day. Oh, have they planned this well? They are going to move in on Binyamin from three sides until the point where they are going to completely surround Binyamin. They have it all planned, all figured out. They've laid an extremely elaborate strategy that's going to emerge from these psukim, because they realize, number one, that they are going to succeed in battle only because God has guaranteed it. And even when God guarantees something, man should never permit himself to depend on a miracle. You have no right. As we talked in that parsha shir about during the Gulf War, walk around without a gas mask. What do I need a gas mask for? What do I have to go run into a sealed room? I have trust in God. Bitachon, nothing's going to happen to me. That's nonsense. Bitachon requires of man that he should attempt in some way to diminish the extent of the miracle. I have a responsibility to act. I have a responsibility to be a partner with God in creation. How am I a partner with God? He's going to wage war, and I'm going to wage war. The two of us are going out to battle. So therefore here, immediately after they receive a guarantee that they're going to win, Vayosem Yisrael Orvim El Agivos Aviv, they placed Orvim. When it says Orvim, it means not merely one group of men in lying in ambush. There are going to be a number of different groups, so we're going to watch how during the course of battle they begin to move. Vayalu b'nei Yisrael, b'nei Binyamin, b'nei Shishi, the sons of Israel came up to b'nei Binyamin on the third day. Vayarchu El Agivos Kifan Dafan, they started the battle against Giva. They moved toward Giva as they had done Kifan Dafan the day before and the day before that. Vayetzu b'nei Yisrael, b'nei Binyamin, l'knatam b'nei Binyamin, went out toward them. Hon tekum min ha'ir. They pulled them, they drew them away from the city. Israel began to fall back. Binyamin now is going to think that they're falling back just as they did the last 2 days. Binyamin began to kill from Israel as they had done before. Bamesilot asher achat ola Beit El va'achat givata basadeh kishloshim ish b'Yisrael. If you imagine a straight line going from Hebron, Beit Lechem, Giva, Beit El, Shechem. You have that picture? Israel is going to be moving in from the north. Those who come in from Beit El are coming from the north. Those who are coming toward Giva are coming from the west toward the east. What is to the east of Giva? To the east of Giva is going to be Midbar Yehuda, the desert of Yehuda. Male Adumim, and the desert of Yehuda. Interesting to notice that in our little country, Male Adumim and Midbar Yehuda have become a new entity. There aren't 10 places that they give you the weather about now. They also give you the weather for Male Adumim and Midbar Yehuda. What a little country, like you have everything going on over here. Weather changes from one place to the next. Okay? So here we have, there's the road that leads up to Beit El to the north. Remember, where is Giva? Giva is someplace around Shuafat, Atarot, the airport north of Yerushalayim. Further north is Beit El. Vayomru b'nei Binyamin said, Nigafim hem lefanenu kivar yishona, they are being smitten before us as at first. U'b'nei Yisrael amru, and b'nei Yisrael on the other hand are saying, Nonusa, we will flee. U'netaknuhu min ha'ir al ha'masilot, we are going to draw them out from the city to the main highway. Because on the main highway, that's where the main force of the Jewish people from Beit El are going to come down. They're going to draw them out to the main highway, and then from the north, they're going to come down. V'chol ish Yisrael komu mikomo, all of Israel rose from their place, v'yachu b'Baal Tamar, and they waged war against Baal Tamar. Baal Tamar, not everybody is certain where Baal Tamar is, but I believe Rashi brings that Baal Tamar is Yericho. Isn't Yericho called Ir HaTamarim, the city of the dates? Ir HaTamarim, a lot of date trees. That means that there's a major force of the Jewish people now moving toward the east of Binyamin. Yericho is to the east. Eretz Binyamin is that whole area, yes, from Shuafat and Neve Yaakov, Givat Tzarfatit, all the way to really near to the to Yericho. So now they're moving in toward Yericho. That means there's a major force now to the east. There's a force to the north. There's a force coming in straight to Giva from the west. They're the ones that are drawing them out now toward the main highway. And now, someplace outside of Gava, there was a cave where an Orev was, and they come out unexpected from the Ma'arei Giva. And what's going to happen now soon is we're going to have Binyamin surrounded from all sides. Vayovo mineged la-Giva, they came from the other side of Giva. Aseret alafim ish bachur mikol Yisrael, 10,000 chosen men from Israel. V'hamilchom ha-kaveda, the war became very heavy. V'heim lo yadu, Binyamin didn't know. Binyamin thought at this moment that they are in the process of a victory for the third day in a row. It looks like victory, and what they don't know is that they are walking into the jaws of defeat. They don't know that the evil is about to touch them and touch them very hard. Because we have now forces from all sides. You see how the Pasuk writes it? God is the one who smites Binyamin before Israel. And they destroyed 25,100 men. The sons of Binyamin saw that they had been smitten. The people of Israel gave place for Binyamin. They permitted them an escape route. They permit them an escape route because there's another group lying in ambush toward the east, waiting to stop Binyamin. Ki batchu el ha'arev. I like the word batchu. They trusted the Orev. Could we say they had bitachon in the Orev? Do you know when you can have bitachon in yourself? When you know that the outcome of the battle is decided by God. When you consciously know that the outcome of the battle is decided by God, then you have a right. Yes, God is going to win the war for us, but we have to wage the war. And in waging the war, yes, we've taken the correct steps. We have the Orev in place. Asher Samuel HaGiva, the Orev that they had placed by Giva. V'Orev HaChishu, the Orev hurried. V'Yifshitu HaGiva, and they spread out over Giva. V'Yimshach HaOrev, and the Orev continued, the ambush continued to move in. V'Yachet Kol Ha'ir L'Fichorev. Here is an Orev, that means a number of things have happened. There is one group that has ambushed the forces of Binyamin. There is another group that has entered the city while Binyamin is outside of the city, and they're now going to destroy the city completely. Very similar to Milchemet Ha'ai. Very similar to Milchemet Ha'ai. Too few men. Because there too, what happened by Ai? They assumed, we don't need everybody to go up over there. 3,000 men will be able to wipe out Ai. There was also a sense of their own ability to just take care. Eyes a piece of cake. We'll just be able to, 3,000 men. We don't need, that's what they came back and said, we don't need Kol Anshei HaMelacha, we don't need everybody. God says, no, I want everybody. And God there too has told them that they're going to win. Because God told them, somebody has sinned. You have to remove the sinner. They remove Achan, they punish him, which means now the way is clear for a victory. And despite the way that the way is clear for victory, they know that it's their responsibility to act as though this is real war, and they're going to have to prepare themselves properly for battle. It's very, very similar. Not only very similar, even the Malbim, as he describes the battle over there, I think you remember how we described the battle, it also ended in movements of troops in different directions that all of a sudden the people of Ai found themselves surrounded. Yes, except that, of course, the tragedy over here is that it was This is Milchemet Achim. This is waging war against brothers. This is civil war. Civil war. I tell you, I always feel that as long as the battles of Jews in Eretz Yisrael are verbal ones, we're still okay. So we say sharp things to one another or about one another. As long as it remains verbal and it doesn't go any further than that, there were unfortunately terrible times where there was civil war. Alright, just another few psukim, and I'm hoping that next week we finish Sefer Shoftim. I'm going to try. A time had been set. They synchronized their watches. A time had been set with the ambush. At which moment they would get into the city and they would bring the city up in fire. That would be the signal for all the forces of Yisrael in the whole area to begin to move in on Binyamin. The people of Israel turned around in battle. Ubinyamin hechel hakot chalalim b'ish Yisrael kishloshim ish. One would have to read over this parak to see something that appears very often in Tanakh. There will be a general description of a battle, and then the pasuk is going to go back to give us more details. There are going to be some things that are repeated now that were said earlier, but they are repeated in order to give us additional information. We haven't been told yet that Yisrael turned around at one point. Those who were fleeing turned around in order to become the pursuers, because Binyamin had begun to kill some 30 men, and they had said, listen, they are being beaten before us as in the first war. And just as that is happening, the city goes up in flames. The Hamas 8, Hechelo la'alot min ha'ir amud ashan, they see the fire coming up from the city. Vayifin Binyamin acharav, Binyamin turned around, v'hine olo klil ha'ir ha'shamayim, the city is going up in smoke to heaven. And ish Yisrael hafach, v'yibohel ish Binyamin. So all of a sudden, at one moment, Binyamin turns around, and they see the city going up in flames. So that on one side, they know that they are now trapped. And then all of a sudden, they turn around toward those whom they are pursuing, and they see that the pursuers are now turning around in order to pursue them. Confusion reigns. This is the beginning of the end of the battle. They don't know where to turn. Kiro kinogo olavara, and at that moment he saw that the evil is befalling him. Where can they go now? The main highway through Shuafat, Ramallah, that main highway is now being held by who? By Ish Yisrael. There's a group that's coming from the north. They have a group to the from the west. Where can they go? There's only one way left for them, and that is eastward into the desert. They don't know that there are forces already that have taken Yericho and will be moving in from the east toward them. They turn to the desert. And then all of a sudden they realized that the war had caught up with them. And those who were in the cities, Israel, Jewish forces, had already made their way into the cities of Binyamin. Mashchitim al tov b'talcho. Binyamin is now being destroyed from within. Kitru et Binyamin. Kitru comes from the word keter, a crown, surrounded from all sides. Kitru et Binyamin. They surrounded him. Hirdifu. They pursued him. Menucha hidrichuhu. This sounds a little bit poetic. Some say that Menucha Hidrichu means that they are where it had been peaceful, that now Hidrichu, they are being they're being caught in the place where there had been peace. I saw one of the modern Mefarshim says Menucha, and this will give you an indication of how widespread the battle was. Menucha is another name for a place called Manachat. Do you know Manachat? In Arabic, Malcha. Samuch Lebayit Vagan. Right near Bayit Vagan. Isn't there where the new Kanyon is going up and the stadium and all of those things? at Menucha, it seems forces were moving all over, and there is where they caught the major forces of Binyamin, at Manachat. Ad Nocha HaGiva Mizrach HaShemesh, from there until Giva to the east. Vayiplu b'Binyamin 18,000 men fell, at Kol Eila Anshei Chayil, men of great valor. Vayifnu v'yonusum HaMidbara, they turned and they fled. In other words, if they're getting it at Manachat and they're getting it at Giva and the road to Beit El is already captured, they're left with only one direction in which to flee, and that is to the east. Vayifnu vayalom habidbar el sela harimon toward Rimon, vayaululuhu bamesilot kameshet alafim ish, along the road out to the desert, another 5,000 men fall in battle. Vayadbiku acharav ad Gidom, they continued to move against them until a place called Gidom, and there they smote another 2,000 men. Vayihi kol hanofel mibinyamin 25,000 ish sholeif cherev vayomahu, 25,000 men fell on that day. At kol eila anshei chayil, all of them men of great valor. Vayifnu vayonusu hamidbar al sela harimon, 600 men fled. Vayeshu b'sela rimon, and they remained in sela rimon arbo chadoshim, 4 months. These people are going to be very important in the last chapter. These are the last 600 males of the tribe of Binyamin. The ishiskol shovel b'nei Binyamin vayakum fichar, of the forces of Israel returned to b'nei Binyamin, and they smote them in the cities. Meir mitom ab behema, the people of the cities, until animals had kol haninza, everything that they found. Gam kol ha'odim hanimtzaot shilchu ba'esh, they destroyed all of the cities of Binyamin. Terrible, terrible tragedy. And what will happen as a result of that tragedy is that it would seem as though a tribe of Israel is going to be completely eradicated. Chapter 21 in Yirtzeh Hashem next week. And there are going to be very, very important messages that will emerge from that. Okay, everybody.